This week's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by all the awesome people who sent encouraging emails and tweets, left complimentary comments on the blog, gave us positive reviews on iTunes, and otherwise helped convince us to start doing this thing on a weekly basis. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
The Bible talks about the homosexuals, they're worthy of death. But not only them that do it, but that approve of it. They're worthy of death. And you people approve of that. That's why
this is Cecil.
And this is Tom from Cognitive Dissonance.
Is that at dissonancepod.com? Is that where you'd find that?
Dissonancepod.com, I think, is our podcast.
That's it. That is where you would find our podcast. And we, in fact, Tom, did evolve
from filthy monkey men.
Filthy monkey men. I love how that sounds. It really just does roll off the tongue, doesn't it?
Thursday, it's April 4th, and I'm already tired of changing my fantasy baseball lineup. I'm your host, No Illusions, and from decadent New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist. On this week's episode, a Riyadh woman has consensual sex despite overt bicycle riding, God blames his mysterious ways on the lack of a father figure in his life, and Tom Beasley of An American Atheist joins us to explain how the hell he gets off naming his atheist podcast after a country that was clearly founded as a Christian nation. But first, Heath Enright with the diatribe.
Is created by an intelligent designer. Existence is an experimental game, and God is the initial inventor of the game, and is now an all-knowing spectator watching as we humans misuse the power of choice he gave us. If God's a sports fan, his model sport for humankind is definitely NASCAR. The world he built is a very similar, ridiculously dangerous situation. A bunch of crazy rednecks, competitively wasting fossil fuels, and God's just watching from the stands, waiting to see the really good wrecks. The takeaway here is that if God is a NASCAR fan, he can't be that intelligent, can he? So even if he exists, intelligent design is not the preferred nomenclature. I'd call it military intelligent design at best. Even God didn't think through his exit strategy. Intelligently designed games end elegantly, like checkmate in chess. For this game of existence on Earth, his exit strategy seems to be nuclear holocaust. I'm just saying, if religion were to dial back their stance on the intelligence part, just go for the design claim, I'd still think they were silly, but noticeably less so. But they definitely don't do dialing back very well. Admitting fault isn't exactly in the church's wheelhouse. Granted, the faults they need to admit are often unspeakable, but I'm pretty sure that actually makes it worse. The point is that God's clearly not that smart, and it looks like devoutly religious people agree. Everyone I've ever met who takes a religion really seriously is always trying to justify absurd ways to bend the rules. Like God didn't read his own fine print. Great example, take butt sex. If you're willing to bend over the rules a little, anal sex is the number one virginity preservation method. I like to call this the poop hole loophole. Like this somehow softens the blow later when you're married, trying to make your sexual history sound less bad. No, I'm a legit virgin. I've had huge amounts of cock in the hole right next to it, but that vagina is clean virgin territory. Bullshit, even then you know they've played just the tip a few times. Speaking of just the tip, my circumcised friend from college, named Israel, also a firm believer in the validity of the poop hole loophole, was excellent at finding ways to just barely avoid directly breaking all those detailed orthodox Jewy rules he had to deal with. For example, he's not allowed to use any fire, electricity, or machinery of any kind on Shabbos, which is sundown Friday until sundown Saturday. So if we're all hanging out smoking pot on Friday, he couldn't partake. Unless, of course, somebody drew a bong head into the tube without inhaling it, and then happened by chance to leave that random glass smoke-filled column sitting on the table with a coaster over it, and then Israel happened to randomly choose to take one of his normal breaths of air while that coaster was quickly removed and that glass tube was on his face. This would just be a chain of unrelated events. The fire used to burn the pot, to make the smoke, to fill the tube was wielded by somebody else, and the bong water acted as a mystical justification barrier, completely separating the fire from whoever might have, by chance, been breathing too close to the bong afterward. Like, Jew God is up there going, shit, yeah, that bong water really ties my hands on this one. My boss, God, be up my ass about this if I smite this crafty stoner. And, as far as I know, Israel's never been smote, so clearly the loophole worked. And this encourages further abuse of the rules. So why are we surprised about priests raping kids? Bunch of priests sitting around trying to figure out loopholes. God says we can't have sex and can't masturbate. What option does that leave us? Roll with me on this. Keeping in mind the Lord works in mysterious ways. What if a kid gave me a Dutch rudder? We're not touching dicks. I'm touching my dick, and he's just working my arm. So I'm not jerking it, he's not jerking it, everybody wins. I guess not that many priests are big Kevin Smith fans. All I'm saying, it seems like nobody's telling the priest side of the story. Maybe the rape thing was a little extreme, but clearly the current rules aren't sustainable. If I were a priest, I'd be lobbying for glory holes in the confessional booth or something. At least slutty sinners could try to buy indulgences with happy endings. There is another solution. It's nowhere near as fun as my glory hole idea, but probably more reasonable. The church could always just acknowledge that celibacy is ridiculous and goes against the biological instinct to reproduce, or at least the instinct to get laid. But this solution would never happen, because the church would end up having to reconcile its absurd universe view with contradictory things like evidence. Churches just don't do epistemology. Figuring things out with reason is a giant hassle compared to faith.
Psalms 14:1, annotated. The foolish man says in his heart there is no God. The wise man says it on his podcast.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me tonight for headlines is the tango to my cash, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to tango?
Tango it up.
All right, in our lead story tonight, Pennsylvania State Representative Tim Kreiger has introduced legislation designed to act as an impediment to the First Amendment. There's a lot going on in this story, but the important takeaway is that Representative Kreiger is willing to boldly stand up to a beleaguered minority as long as they're kids. The story begins with Moses wandering down a mountain with a couple of tablets and placing them in a roundabout way in front of a school near Pittsburgh. A few students pointed out that a giant copy of the Ten Commandments shouldn't be there. When the officials refused to voluntarily remove it, the students got together with the Freedom from Religion Foundation and sued the school.
That'll get you lynched by some zealots.
Well, the judge in the case tried to let them sue anonymously, but that's reasonable, so the Christians are against it.
Well, other than being a way for students to avoid bullying and fear, what exactly is the problem with anonymous plaintiffs? Who exactly is being harmed by the anonymity? Jesus?
Well, we could ask Tim Kreiger, fanatical Christian blowhard and guy who looks like he'd be second in command for a plot to take over the world, but not the main bad guy. He called bullshit on this and proposes a law that would make it illegal for a plaintiff to sue anonymously, regardless of the ruling of the judge in the case. But don't worry, this would only apply to cases where religious monuments were being challenged, so at least they're not trying to pretend that it's fair.
Does he have an evil monocle?
He looks like he took it off for the picture, honestly. You could see the mark.
The tan line of the monocle usually being there when he was plotting.
Exactly, and the little cigarette holder. Oh, wait, that's Mr. Peanut, isn't it? And in other centuries, the morality of Catholicism is in the news again, despite not having changed in generations. The latest incarnation of their pre-scientific ethics comes to us from Boston, home of the nation's oldest public park, numerous substandard sports franchises, and Boston College, where administrators have threatened disciplinary action against students for the unspeakable crime of promoting safe sex.
I thought BC was the socially responsible Jewish one. No, that's BU, I guess.
Yeah, this is the Jesuit one.
Whatever, theists all look the same to me.
The group BC Students for Sexual Health was hit with a cease and desist order saying that the group's goal of promoting common sense was, quote, not in concert with the mission of a Catholic and Jesuit university.
I think BC is just bitter about being a safety school.
In other news, our whirlwind tour of batshit crazy states makes a long overdue stop in Utah, where the Mormons look to cement their reputation as backwards even compared to other religions.
About time we checked that, Utah.
The Christian Newswire alerts us to a new service offered by a Salt Lake City-based Mormon pseudo-clinic that brings cyber homophobia into the 21st century. It's another one of these pray-the-gay-out type things where some callous charlatan takes money from a conflicted person whose preacher tells him that their identity is offensive to God. In the press release, I liked how they refer to homosexuality as same-sex attraction. That was a nice touch.
Wow, so they have an online resource for Mormon homophobes, that's what you're saying?
Basically, yes.
When I was a kid, we had to make up our own fag jokes, and we liked it. I wouldn't be the hilarious, hateful, sarcastic homophobe I am today if I had a website as a crutch.
Yeah, these kids these days.
Also, Mitt Romney wouldn't be the hateful homophobe he is today if his spick father had raised him to be a little more tolerant.
in case we had nothing to apologize for in the next episode.
I guess we'll cut that one. Yeah.
And from the somebody had, yeah, probably. And from the somebody had to say it department, a new study warns parents that extreme religiosity in a child could be a warning sign of insanity. Every article I saw in the study was really careful to point out all the beneficial corollaries of faith in kids, such as lower incidence of criminal behavior, higher self-esteem, better academic performance, and less trouble fucking the preppy chicks. But the association between religiosity and crazy is pretty hard to ignore.
Yeah, how could we ever have seen this problem coming? Kids never get too carried away with things.
No.
How could dangling heaven and hell in front of 8-year-olds lead to unbalanced behavior?
Right, and a person that gets religious about fucking Pokemon. Well, the study warns that extreme devotion to a religion could be emblematic of anxiety, unaddressed trauma or stress, obsessive-compulsive disorder, bipolar disorder, scrupulosity, schizophrenia, manic depressive, or early onset of being an insufferable dick. Moving on to some other countries are laughing at us news, an atheist shoe company in Berlin is charging that the U.S. Post Office deliberately discriminates against them and backs up the allegation with an informal study that shows that identical packages with the abominable atheist logo took an average of 3 days longer to arrive at their destinations.
I'm guessing it's not so much about the atheist sticker. Anyone who's been to the Holocaust Museum will be suspicious of German shoe companies, atheist or not.
The takeaway, though, is that there's a company that makes pretty cool-looking shoes that say Ich bin Atheist on them, and they're getting some free advertising on our show, courtesy of the post office, being a bunch of miserable dicks. And in this week's Living, Breathing Evidence Against Intelligent Design, Dr. Joseph Mastropaolo has announced that he'll impotently wave $10,000 around in the air in a vainglorious, insincere, meaningless publicity stunt. Mastropaolo, a grown adult with an advanced degree who believes in Noah's Ark, is pretending to offer $10,000 to anyone who can scientifically disprove the literal creation account described in Genesis. And yes, that's the one where they say that God created night and day, and then 3 days later created the sun.
So you have to just, like, put up 10 grand against him and have a trial?
Yeah, basically like a street basketball kind of thing or a billiards situation.
I don't really have time to deal with the whole trial. You think he's willing to settle out of court for like $5,000?
Or for 20 bucks, I can explain to him how scientifically disproving is not a real meaningful term.
My old lies could beat up your new truths.
Right, and apparently it doesn't impress him that the very foundations of biology, astronomy, geology, chemistry, cosmology, anthropology, literature, and philosophy all disprove a literal reading of Genesis.
Well, instead of scientifically disproving creation, you think we could unscientifically prove science? I think we just need a fictional book that agrees with science blindly rather than agreeing with science based on evidence. To get stupid masses behind something, you need an opiate like a book of short stories.
That seems to work. And finally, in international news, Saudi Arabia makes a bold move to counteract the baseless stereotype that women are mistreated in majority Muslim countries. In a valiant and unprecedented move that would have made Elizabeth Cady Stanton look like Archie Bunker's wife, the religious police in Saudi Arabia have lifted the ban on women riding bicycles. Now, obviously, this can't be done all at once or you'd risk utter chaos, so they'll be limiting it to specific parks and recreational areas, and of course, the women will have to be chaperoned by male relatives and covered from head to toe in a potato sack. But I think it's safe to say that sexism in Saudi Arabia is pretty much over.
Well, I mean, everyone focuses on the women's rights thing. I'm a little more offended by the portrayal of men here. The whole system casts a really rapey shadow on our gender. like seeing a woman riding a bicycle without a full-body straitjacket, and I'm going to immediately be sent off on this rampage of unsolicited penis-wielding. I don't see that happening. It's just not a fair portrayal of...
And on the Heath Enright wielding his penis mental image, we'll close out the headlines tonight. Heath, thanks for hanging out.
Glad to be here, as always.
When we come back, Tom Beasley will join me to circle around religion like a hungry buzzard. Occasionally we get feedback from listeners that really enjoy the show, but think we sometimes get a little carried away. For example, in last week's episode, when discussing the Westboro Baptist Church, my co-host Heath Enright expressed a desire to savagely penetrate Fred Phelps' rectum. We received several comments about the segment, but I chose two that represent what I've come to think of as the two distinct audiences that this program appeals to. John on Facebook said he really enjoyed parts of the show, but felt that the anally penetrating Fred Phelps portion went, quote, beyond edgy and made me squeamish. On the other hand, we also got an email from Daniel in Plano who said, quote, love it, I almost pissed myself when Heath started talking about butt-fucking Phelps. So in our ceaseless quest to push the envelope of podcasting, I'd like to offer two explanations of the Fred Phelps comments, and because the show's only 30 minutes, I'd like to offer both explanations at the same time. So if you find yourself in the John camp that feared that segment might make you vomit, please remove your right earphone for the remainder of this segment. If you're more in Daniel's spontaneous urination camp, please remove your left earphone. And if you're not generally inspired to exude any bodily secretions because of our skits, feel free to leave both earphones in and get twice as much podcast for the next 2.5 minutes. I think it's safe to say that we live in a world where the walls of censorship are fast falling away. Where once some government censor stood between your ears and the vulgarities of less prudish individuals in the 21st century, you're no longer protected from words like
shit,
George Carlin's notorious
motherfucker and tits.
There is, of course, one
positive
consequence.
While
it expands the scope of the First Amendment to previously unimagined heights, we also
have
to
enjoy
a lot more
off-color
dick and fart jokes and
hilarious
social commentary. As a result, some
refined
consumers of new media with little
appreciation
for vulgarity get
offended.
Fucked. As a producer of such content, one must act as one's own censor and must therefore strike a
frustrating
balance between being too
vulgar
and being too
academic.
While I respect and appreciate the concerns of the people who wish I would be
obscene myself
less often, I'm naturally inclined to side with a group that most mirrors my own sense of
propriety, humor.
The unfortunate result is that I must occasionally ask some members of my audience to
endure in good humor.
Go fuck themselves. Take, for example, our recent headline segment about the
detestable bigots,
spunk garglers, at the Westboro Baptist Church. During that segment, our mutual dislike for the group was obvious, and my co-host made some
untoward,
hysterical comments about their leader, Fred Phelps, and things that might be hatefully inserted into his
anus. Asshole.
Including Heath's
engorged,
throbbing
member,
dick. While some prudes found this offensive, I think it's important to keep in mind that Fred Phelps is
despicable,
an ass nugget, and deserves to be
mocked,
gay hate fucked,
mercilessly.
What's more, we should do so with
unapologetic,
unlubricated,
spite-filled,
splinter-filled
veracity,
broom handles, in the deepest and most
scornful,
painful
way.
And when we here at the Scathing Atheist
comment publicly,
blow our juice
on Fred Phelps, we hope that we can hit him
where it hurts,
in the eyes,
and really make it sting. Now, granted, there are some people that could express their hate for this guy strictly through intellectual criticism, but those of us without the
education,
desire,
or the
verbal dexterity,
words and shit,
to express such scathing distaste without resorting to
obscenity,
fuck-filled tirades,
have
to use the
basest,
funniest
type
of humor. The important thing to remember is that regardless of what words we choose, we all agree that if any target is deserving of our foulest utterings, it's the kind of
visceral
ass-animosity,
fuck-tardery,
and
bullshit
promoted by the Westboro Baptist Church. All right, so this
segment
is really hard to edit, so please put your
left
earphone back in now. It's time for the Atheist Calendar portion of the show. This week we'll be highlighting some of the great secular meetups and conventions coming up in April. We'll start in Lawrence, Kansas, where Reason Fest 3 will be taking place over the weekend of April 20th. The lineup's fantastic, led by Seth Andrews, J.T. Eberhard, Jerry DeWitt, plus Matt Dillahunty and a debate called Moral Combat, and something with the enticing title The Godless Pervert Story Hour, featuring notable godless perverts Greta Christina, David Fitzgerald, and more. A lot of action the following week in the nation's capital. The Secular Coalition for America will be hosting a summit from April 24th to the 26th that will include some great instruction on effective secular lobbying. Also in D.C. on the 27th of April, the Center for Inquiry will be hosting Why Tolerate Religion, a day-long symposium tackling the contentious issue of religion's role in our supposedly secular government. And for our West Coast heathens, CFI on campus will be hosting a leadership conference in the City of Angels on the same weekend. Of course, wherever you are in the world, don't forget that according to the Secular Student Alliance, Thursday, April 18th is National Ask an Atheist Day, so check your local listings to see if there's any way you can get involved. If you want to learn more about this or any of the other events discussed on this episode, please check the show notes for episode 7 at scathingatheist.com. That'll do it for this week's calendar. As always, if you're involved in an atheist, skeptical, or secular event that needs a little free publicity, let me know. And if you're not involved in an atheist, skeptical, or secular event, what the hell are you waiting for? I'm here with Tom Beasley, co-host of an American Atheist podcast. Tom, welcome to the Scathing Atheist.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. Now, I feel like in case anybody thinks I'm being coy, I should point out An American Atheist is the name of your show. If they're wondering, you know, which American Atheist podcast you are the co-host of.
Right. It's a little ambiguous. Yeah.
All right. Now, have you had a chance to listen to The Scathing Atheist yet?
I've only given it a small listen. I've enjoyed what I've heard, and I'm glad. Mostly, I'm glad that there's more voices out there talking about these issues. And I think that, you know, the different perspectives are always good. I know you guys have a little more lighthearted tone than we usually have.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's, you know, you guys have rational, well-reasoned insight. We have fart jokes, but it's the same goal. So,
right.
All right. Now, I've been asked lately. Let me try that once again and make it sound smart later through editing. I've been listening to your show for probably a couple of years now, I guess. I'm a big fan of particularly your contributions to it. I'm jealous of both your intellect and your angelic baritone. But the reason I invited you on the show is I hoped you could expound on a topic that you've touched on a number of times on your program. You've suggested that if you look at the statistical trends, a podcast like yours or mine might be all but meaningless in another 50 or 100 years. So my question to you is, do you think religion is on the way out?
I think that's – short answer, yes, because that seems to be the trend, at least in Western societies. I think it's a little complicated, though, because you have to look at what are the components of religion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you – some people – a lot of people actually say this. This isn't a novel idea I have, is there's lots of elements of religion that are sort of – that human nature are drawn towards because of. Like pattern-seeking behavior, for example, is one thing that people – cites as our strong affiliation towards religion. You know, we'll see phenomenon in the world and we will attribute that to otherworldly things. Mm. And I think that I don't know if that will go away, because I view religion has a small overlap with other things like pseudoscience and superstition. And that has been with us forever.
Right.
And I think even if you look at the secular countries, there is superstition in those countries as well. But obviously that's not all that religion is. Religion, we usually think like organized religion, like Christianity, those sorts of things. I think those are on the way out. And I think that I do agree it's sort of what you're hinting at is sort of the internet has a helpful hand in doing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If organized religion is dying, I think the internet will be the murder weapon.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at – although it gets a lot of criticism, if you look at Reddit and you look at their subreddit Atheism, that has a large following, and I think that a lot of younger people are getting involved in that sort of stuff. And you look at all the blogs and podcasts that have blown up, and they're just sort of trailing along this sort of new atheism resurgence with all the texts that come out too and books. So I think that the internet provides a really good place for people to share like ideas when otherwise they couldn't and they wouldn't even be exposed to them. I know, you know, the Atheism subreddit, for example, gets a lot of criticism, but there's also an occasional post that says, hey, you know, I joined Reddit. I didn't know anything about this stuff. And after being here for a long time, I decided that you guys are right and that I've been wrong this whole time.
Right. I certainly hope there's a point to all the Twitter wars and whatnot I find myself in.
Well, there's other studies that show that a lot of people become a much more accepting of atheists, because I'm sure you've talked about stuff like atheists being less trusted than Muslims and gays. Not that those people shouldn't be trusted necessarily, but a very low level of respect and trust towards atheists.
Yeah, don't we still fall below rapists?
It's the study's a little complicated, but basically they equated us with that or a little lower in terms of, I think it was like trust levels or something. I don't remember exactly
right.
What it was. But right, yeah, based on the scenario that the respondents answered questions to. So yeah, I mean, that's a big problem. And one of the main ways you can combat that is just knowing atheists. And so I think that spread online helps reduce a lot of the stigma towards atheists and negative attitude, like equating us to rapists.
So do you think that the goal of the atheist movement should be to kill religion or to kill religious thinking?
Personally, yes, I do think that. I know a lot of other atheists don't feel that way. And I don't, of course, I need to preface that. I don't think religion should ever be stomped out. I, like most atheists, am a heavy advocate of freedom of speech and freedom of religion. It's a battle that needs to be won through minds, you know, and through argument and discussion. I don't really like legislation that's overbearing on religion, because it's the same sort of path that I have to speak and speak my mind and say what I think about things. But I don't have this idea where everyone should, you know, we should just all learn to live and get along. I think a lot of the ideas behind religion are actually corrosive and bad. That being said, I know a lot of religious people, and I try not to paint with a broad brush, and they're very, you know, liberal in the sense that they support gay marriage. They believe in evolution. They think that creationism is stupid, all things like that. I still think that I think that it should be a goal to minimize the role of religion in society in general.
And in order to do that, you were talking the other day on your show about some of the health risks associated, for example, with leaving religion. So what can be the secular equivalent to those types of communities, those positive influences that we still do need those church organizations for?
Right. Yeah. We were talking on that episode about the strong sense of community that religion gives. Because, for example, religious people in the United States, at least, are happier, at least statistically. And so I do think that we need I think, like we were saying, the online community provides a good outlet for that. I think that people going to, you know, almost every college campus has a support group or a member group where you can go and talk about these things. And I think almost every major town has some sort of group. If you just Google wherever you live, whenever you're listening to this, you can just Google your area and try and meet up with some people. If you don't click with those people, there's oftentimes two or three groups in the bigger cities. So I think that's a good help to sort of combat this problem, because I think culture is good, and it's hard to separate that for some people. For example, Judaism, like I've talked about before, is sometimes does that really well. I know some secular Jews who keep their culture and have a cultural identity, but they don't think that the Bible is literal, and they think that they disregard that all as superstitious mumbo jumbo.
Right, but still hold on to the cultural relevance of Judaism.
Right.
Okay, and so finally, if organized religion is dying, and this is, I know, the question on all my listeners' minds, what can we do to speed the process up?
Well, I think a multi-pronged approach is good. For example, if you look at a blog like P.Z. Myers, Feringola, uh-huh. He has a specific kind of approach. It's a little caustic and a little hostile. I think that has its place for certain people. I think certain people can – that resonates with them, and I don't think he steps over the line too often. I think that's a good approach. So I think it's a varied approach. It depends on who you are. I think it's very important when you're talking to individuals that you just show that you're a nice, caring person, that you're like everyone else, and just express your ideas and have a conversation. I think that does more than any argument does. But on a grander stage where you have a podcast, for example, or where you have blogs or debates, I think there's some room for hostility, because I think some of these things are just offensive. Especially the way that a lot of religions treat homosexuals or their view on science. I think it depends on what the kind of people you're addressing and the level of hostility you should respond with. But I think it really needs to be multi-pronged, and I don't think there's a simple answer. I think it needs to be a case-by-case basis. But I think there's lots of routes and roads to finding a solution to the problem.
Excellent answer, man. I couldn't have said it better myself, which is why I invited you on this show. Thanks for raising the IQ of the scathing atheist for a little bit there.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, if our listeners find themselves obsessed with the soothing mellifluence of your voice, where can they find more of it?
Oh, well, the blog is at anamericanatheist.org. You can check us out. You have feedback for us. We have a contact section we take. If you want some blog articles, you can submit them to us or any feedback you have.
Awesome. Thanks again for joining me, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That's about all the time we've got for tonight. I want to thank Tom Beasley again for hanging out. I want to thank Alan Blumlein for inventing stereo sound. Also want to give a big thanks to Tom and Cecil from Cognitive Dissonance for providing this week's circuitous Farnsworth quote. Those guys put on a really fun podcast, so you should definitely check them out at dissonancepod.com. I also wanted to thank the lovely Lucinda Illusions for everything she does behind the scenes, Heath Enright for everything he does in front of the scenes, but mostly I want to thank God for making this podcast possible by not existing. Be sure to check back with us in 168 hours for the Holy Babel edition, in which Heath, my wife, and I will do something that at least two of us will regret almost immediately. If you can't wait that long, be sure to check out our erratically published blog, follow me on Twitter at Noah_Illusions, and like us on Facebook, because apparently people still use Facebook. If you enjoy the show, please help us spread the word by leaving us a glowing review on iTunes or whatever you use. Don't forget to help us drive up our Stitcher ranking by listening to us there. And if you don't have the Stitcher app yet, don't worry, I'm not judging you for it the way the attractive members of the opposite sex are. If you have comments, questions, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. We'll be right back.
out, but I know I'm not going to end up using that. Sorry.